Hi, I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthfeel. We're here to talk about living the food life in Philadelphia and wherever you are. This week, we're going to talk about our favorite meals of 2017, the things on our holiday cooking agenda, and our food resolutions for the new year. But first, let's talk about something we read this week, something sad.
Yeah, our beloved cookbook stall at the Reading Terminal Market is closing. This is Philadelphia's only dedicated cookbook store of any kind. And their last day is December 29th. And I am sad.
I am very sad. I have purchased many of my cookbooks there, including our Lucky Peach Cookbook Club. Peach 101 Easy Asian Recipes I bought there. I think I bought my copy of Plenty there. It's going to be sad the first time I walk by there and it isn't there.
Well, and Jill, the woman who owns it, has definitely become a friend over the years. I have partnered with her on events. Every time I'm in the market, I try to swing by and say hi to her, look at what she has in stock. She always had interesting imports and books that you didn't see everywhere else.
And cool magazines, like all the interesting culinary magazines.
Yeah, I think that was the first place I saw the magazine Cured with that like ham hock leg and a high heel.
We talked about it on the show.
And so it's a loss for Philadelphia. And I totally get it. Jill wants to move on and do different things. But I'm sad that we won't have a dedicated cookbook, a culinary book space anymore.
I know people say that you can buy books online. And of course I do.
Yeah.
Oftentimes I want a book, I order it up and it comes to my door. But what I used to experience at the cookbook stall was discovering books I didn't know I wanted.
Yeah, totally.
That's what I will really miss. And it's hard to. And that's kind of that you have to go into a culinary bookstore to have that experience.
Yeah. And, hopefully this will just create space in Philadelphia for perhaps something else that will fill the void. And maybe someone else will create the new cookbook culinary institution for Philly.
We need it. I know. We definitely need it. Philly is a food crazed city. I know chefs loved the cookbook stall. And I know that many chefs also pop in at Cook on Rittenhouse where they have a small selection of cookbooks. So it's going to be home cooks, chefs. I guess tourists don't know what they're missing in Reading Terminal.
It's true.
But she did have a lot of interesting Philadelphia. She carried a lot of local authors' books.
Ugh. So it gives me a pang in my heart to know that we won't have that anymore. But good for Jill for moving on to new and brighter things. According to the article, she's going to start a dog walking company, which is pretty fun.
We certainly wish Jill all the best and people should do them, But yeah. I will miss having that little store.
And seeing Jill's, smiling
friendly face.
Yeah.
I always enjoyed chatting with Jill.
So sad.
It's a bummer.
Yeah.
But hopefully good news for her.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, should we talk about something more upbeat?
Yeah. So we're kind of doing some year-end roundup and wrap-up in this episode. So we wanted to talk a little bit about our favorite meals from the last year, both the ones we cooked and the ones we ate out.
Yeah. As this list was evolving, I sort of focused on the ones that we made at home. I'll start. How about it?
Go for it.
I have mentioned before that when I visit my sister and her family in Farmville, I do a lot of the cooking, but in reality, her husband and I cook together a lot and we collaborated on a fish taco dinner. We did it wasn't a fried fish taco. They were breaded and baked with a slaw and beans. And it was just a really fun family affair. It did make me feel sad thinking that if they lived closer, we would do it all the time, but it was still really fun to make dinner together and eat together.
Well, I think my very favorite food meal or meals of the year were this summer when I was in Oregon with my family for my mom's birthday. My dad, my sister, and I went crabbing. I talked about this in a previous episode. We rented a boat. We went out in a bay on the Pacific Ocean right there on the coast and caught a bunch of crabs and brought them home. And one night we had a crab feast. And the next night I improvised a whole lot of crab cakes. And those two nights of cooking and eating were so fun.
It sounded pretty delicious.
It was delicious. And the experience of being out on the water with my dad and my sister was so, so wonderful. I just feel like that's one that I'm going to carry with me for a lifetime. So that was a really great meal, both for the experience and for the downright delicious food.
Right. Well, I'll take it off the experience and the people aspect and focus on this one terrific recipe for my next one, which is the sesame noodles with celery salad from Melissa Clark's book, Dinner. I love sesame noodles. Everybody loves sesame noodles. What makes this different and incredible is the celery salad that you put on top of it. I think I've said before on this very show that I like to double the amount of celery salad so that I have just tons of it. It's got, it's full of Szechuan peppercorn and it's just so fresh and zesty and terrific.
Sounds really good.
Have you made it yet?
I haven't made it yet.
You've got to make it.
I know,
I do. You should make it for New Year's because there's like there's a lot of food you're supposed to eat, but long noodles is like long life.
Yeah.
So you can chalk it up to, good luck.
Well, speaking of things we made at home, one of the things that I kept turning to round and round and round again this year was just an Instant Pot pulled chicken. You know, I would do boneless, skinless chicken thighs in the Instant Pot with a jar of salsa. Super easy.
And this do you have a preferred brand?
No, I do. Okay. I do the one that I made at home.
Oh, of course you do.
But
anyway,
I like the Costco salsa. So it's basically 3 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken thighs, 2 cups of salsa, mm-hmm. maybe a pinch of salt if the salsa is not salty. And then you just do it under pressure for like 25 minutes. And then you have this really flavorful, a little bit soupy, like you could turn it into tortilla soup, or you could drain the meat and turn it into tacos, or you can, you know, toss it with some sauteed peppers and onions and make sort of a casserole. It's just really versatile and so good and so easy. That was one of my favorites this year. I really kept turning to that one.
One of my favorites this year and every year is salad and potatoes.
I know you love that.
It's it's like the meal gift that just keeps on giving. We started making it years ago when we had a CSA, and now almost whenever we don't know what to have, or it's healthy, it's fast, it's easy, it's incredibly delicious. And I will say, when I got on my cholesterol reducing tear, I felt sad because a big part of this meal is dipping the roasted potatoes in like a delicious aioli sauce, which I used to make from egg yolk and oil. But I have spent, you know, the last 6 months scouring the market for the finest vegan mayonnaise. And I mean, they're all good, but I have embraced Veganaise, the oldest, the oldie but the goodie. That's really the most delicious. And you know what? The sauces I make with that are just as good. Every bit as good as the egg-based sauces.
Another one I really love this year, Scott makes eggplant parm just about every year. And you know who?
How have I never had this?
I don't know. We need to have you over when we do it sometime. And this year, because he's been doing Weight Watchers and just so everyone knows, Scott has lost 90 pounds in 2017, which is amazing. And so he made a slimmed down version of eggplant parm. And, you know, it was just a little less cheese. He never fries the eggplant anyway. It was always oven baked. But, you know, I was like, oh, it's not going to be as good. Like, I was really sort of like.
So what are the steps he took?
So he really thinly slices the eggplant and then does egg yolk and then breadcrumb, you know, breading, and then toasts them in the oven. So you end up with like these eggplant chips.
Right. My mother actually does the same thing.
And then he just layers it with I'll make a tomato sauce for him with just like tomato and garlic and onion and a little olive oil and basil. And then it's just layers of that with some part skim ricotta and mozzarella. And he really cut back on the cheese this year.
Oh, okay.
And I thought it was going to be sort of not
sad.
As good.
Yeah.
It was so good. Like really the flavor of the eggplant was like it sung this, the delicacy of the tomato sauce was really present. And the cheese, instead of it being like this gloppy, gluey mess, you know, which in my mind had been the pleasure of eggplant parm, instead the pleasure was the flavor and the crispness and the crunchiness and then the tenderness in the inside. I liked it better.
I wonder if you could do it with the vegan ricotta.
I don't know. You probably could and then make it totally cholesterol free.
Just a thought.
Anyway, it was really good, and he made a lot, and we ate it for like a week, and it was such a pleasure. And so it's nice that to know that even when you're trying to make something better for your, like for your body, that it doesn't have to be a sacrifice for the taste buds.
That's how I felt about the stuffing I made over Thanksgiving.
So that was a really good one.
I have an Instant Pot one on my list as well.
Yeah.
Which is Instant Pot Risotto. This is kind of a recent addition to my rotation because I, for whatever reason, believe that it wouldn't come out very well. Yeah. But it comes out terrific. I use the basic formula in the How to Instant Pot book.
Yeah.
And you can just vary it up with like vegetables. I really tend to default toward a mushroom risotto.
The best.
Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. And in the Instant Pot, it's 7 minutes.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
So you can have risotto with salad on the table in really under 20 minutes. It's incredible.
I love it. I love it.
Thank you, Daniel Shumsky, for that wonderful recipe.
Yeah. So I do have one restaurant meal on here that I had recently. And part of the reason I loved it.
You went to the Love without me?
I did go to the Love without you.
Sorry, I was skipping ahead on the script.
I went to the Love, with our friend Tanaya and, Johanna Kinval, who wrote the new book Smorgasbord and who co-wrote.
Is it the Fika writer?
Yeah, the Fika writer. They, Johanna was in town. So we went recently and,
is it true that they have kombucha on draft?
I didn't see it on the menu. Oh. I didn't see that. I maybe just.
Would you have seen it?
I didn't look very closely. Okay. Anyway. I didn't look very closely.
Proceed.
But anyway, so we went and we just got like salads and veg and, they did have pierogi. We got an order of pierogi, but then we got the salads and a side of broccoli. And I just want to say that the two things on that menu that I had that felt transcendently good were the buttermilk salad. I mean, it's basically like a butter lettuce, sort of ranchy style dressing, but it wasn't too light. It wasn't too heavy. It was really nice and light. It had a little bit of Bertrand Blue, but not so much to make it gloppy, but it was just like the platonic ideal of a salad. It was crisp and light and flavorful and rich, but not too rich. It like hit all the right notes.
I really want to check that place out, mainly because I heard they have kombucha on draft.
Yeah. But the other thing they have the seared broccoli with a sweet and hot sauce and,
seared broccoli with a sweet and hot sauce. Does it cover the broccoli or is it like for dipping?
It's like lightly dressed with it. But it was so good. And I've been recently on this sort of seared broccoli kick on my own. My cousin gave me a giant cast iron skillet. And so lately when I make broccoli, what I do is I heat it up to the point where it's starting to smoke. And then I just throw wet broccoli on it with a little olive oil and let it sort of, you know, blacken in spots. And I thought that was good just on its own, a little salt. But that sweet, hot, it's like it starts sweet and ends hot sauce was so good.
That sounds very tasty.
So anyway, so that was one of the most kind of simple yet spectacular meals I've had this year.
Well, I'll tell you about my most memorable year meal of the year, which I'm you can read about in Eater. Eater asks a bunch of food people to like recap their year, and I answered the big Q&A. But my most memorable and most fun meal of the year was the family style Filipino feast that they do at Perla Restaurant.
Yeah.
On Wednesdays and I believe Sundays. I don't remember if I told you about this before, but it's a situation. Perla on most nights of the week is kind of like an upscale fine dining take on Filipino flavors.
Okay.
Okay. But you go in on these other days and it's a flat price. I can't exactly remember the price. Maybe it's $45. Maybe it's $35. And the table is covered in banana leaves. There's no utensils. And so first they come out of the kitchen and they dump a pile of garlic rice on the leaves.
Wow.
And then spring rolls, like multiple little spring rolls come out. Chunks of like, I think fried pork belly. Vegetables, all these different vegetables that are, you know, they're sort of, I don't know how they cook them. They're called, I think, pinkabet. And then a half a chicken and a whole fried fish and all these little sauces that they make in house there. One of the sauces is based on liver somehow.
Oh my
it's
God.
Really interesting. And then you would just eat this with your hands.
It sounds
it's
so good.
Crazy. And it was so good. And we had leftovers for days.
Oh my God.
I really was out of my element when the food was literally dumped on the table. But I got into it and it was a fun date night. And I could see all the people that were in the room, like went through the same series of emotions that I did. And like ultimately you just have to surrender to the mess.
Yeah.
And it was really a lot of fun.
That sounds great. Well, if you have any favorite meals, either ones you cooked or you had out at a restaurant, or you had at a friend's house. We'd love to hear about
them.
Can
I just add one more?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, Joy.
Joy of Cooking Potlucks 1 and 2.
Yes.
They were some of the most fun.
They were great.
Meals. The most, it was so cool to see other home cooks in action.
Yeah. And we're going to do another one on January 21st, I believe. Yeah. Sunday, January 21st. So if you're in Philly and you want to join us for that potluck, just leave a comment in the show notes and we'll make sure you get all the information.
Okay. So we're recording this. It's like right on the cusp of high holiday craziness here.
Hanukkah starts in a couple days. Christmas is
two weeks from tomorrow. So we're getting pretty serious about what we're going to cook for the holidays.
Joy, tell us about what you're making.
Okay. So my mother typically does Christmas at her house for a crowd of like, I don't know, 14 to 18 people. And my mother is not the most comfortable person when it comes to cooking, menu planning. So this year I tried to involve myself more by creating kind of a collaborative menu that hung together. Like my mother will, left to her own devices, she'll make a roast turkey, she'll buy ham, she'll get, she'll make an eggplant parmesan, she'll make a lasagna.
Good Lord.
Like the whole thing will just like not, first of all, it'll be a ridiculously excessive amount of food and it will be weird. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really like a meal that hangs together. So yeah. I said to my mother, why don't we do, I know you love to make my mother is an eggplant parmesan specialist. I was like, I know you love to make your eggplant. So why don't we do a Christmassy theme? You leave the meat entree to me. You'll make the eggplant. We'll give other family members different assignments. So, I was trying to think of what would be the ideal thing that I could make at home the day before and that would improve overnight.
Yeah.
So of course I was thinking like braised meats.
Always.
When my grandmother was alive, she liked to make brajol, which is, you get like a small piece of steak, you pound it very thin, and then you roll it up. In my family, they were usually like 4 inches wide by 2 inches thick, I would say.
Okay.
It's a special dish, and I've made it, and it's, would be kind of a pain to be fabricating all those, like how many brajols, like 30 brajols, like 45 brajols.
Oh my God.
So I was like, how else can we interpret this idea? So I've thought, why don't we do like a large format brajol and do just two of them?
Sounds good to me.
Give me feedback because I haven't really gotten too far along here. So I ordered 2 5-pound flat end briskets from La Divisa.
Okay.
My plan is to butterfly them and pound them very thin and then roll them up with like the traditional or what is traditional to me, brajol stuffings, prosciutto, breadcrumbs, herbs, garlic, and then sear it and braise it in a tomato sauce. And then
rest it overnight
and then rewarm it at my mother's house, slice it so people will have slices of the brajol instead of like whole little brajols.
I think that sounds brilliant. I mean, the only thing is you're going to need to give yourself plenty of braising time. You know, as someone who has done 12 to 15 pounds of brisket, before, you really, and also you've got to be real careful with that fat cap because there's a lot of fat there.
Will I get it on the flat end?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you should ask them to trim it for you if you can, because it's those flat, that blade end of the brisket is often pretty fatty.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might also want to like separate out the sauce from the braised brajol. So like don't chill it in the sauce. Separate, pull the brajol out, put them on platters, put them in the fridge, separate the sauce because you're going to have a lot of fat in the sauce then that you'll then want it overnight. If you chill it, you'll be able to defat it.
Huh. I wonder if I can defat it first because I think that when you let a braised meat rest in its cooking liquid overnight, that adds to tenderness.
Oh, you think?
I do.
Hmm. I don't know. I always separate out my meat from my braising medium when I do the brisket, and then I reheat it, and then I defat it, and then reheat it slowly. It also gives you the opportunity to like then puree the sauce again and make a really smooth, silky sauce from all your braising liquid.
Huh.
And then you kind of whip in those beef juices into your sauce without the fat, and so it's really luscious.
No, I'm into taking the excess fat away. I know briskets are quite fatty.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I think it sounds really good,
though. I'll report back. But I think that sounds like a good way to feed that many people with something festive that I can do ahead.
So for us this holiday, we're going to do a big, a medium-sized beef roast, just, you know, traditional beef roast with probably, you know, kale salad and some mashed potatoes and things like that. But for my family, like, you know, the meal, the holiday meal isn't as important as like Christmas morning. We get more into that where, you know, there's always a sweet roll, you know, whether it's a cinnamon roll or.
Yeah, I've been inspired by your Instagrams to do that myself sometimes.
And that's really one of my favorite things is to kind of do a little brainstorming beforehand and figure out what kind of sweet roll I'm going to make. One year I did bear claws, which didn't turn out as well as I'd hoped. But I think this year what I want to do is I'll do a cinnamon roll for my family members who have to have that. And then I was thinking about doing something maybe with an almond paste for the folks. For me, I find that cinnamon rolls often taste plasticky if you're not careful.
Hmm.
Like they somehow, a lot of cinnamon registers as plasticky to my taste buds.
That's interesting.
So I want to do something perhaps with almond to, you know, for those of us who don't love the cinnamon as much. So that's what I'm excited about. The other thing I'm making for Hanukkah this year, because I want to include it in my new book, is sofganiyot, the Israeli donut. It's often filled with jam or jelly. And so my family next weekend is doing a Hanukkah party. And so I'm going to do my trial run. I haven't made donuts in about 20 years. So I'm going to do a trial run for that party and see if the recipe works and then send it out to my recipe testers.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I love donuts. I mean, who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Well, another cool thing that we did this year in my family, and I guess this isn't technically an agenda item because it already happened, but my mother's sister Lisa's husband, Joe, so my uncle by marriage, his mother died a few years ago, and she was Italian, and for every year, she made these fried olives that were stuffed with meat, mixture of pork, veal, and chicken.
That sounds so good.
First the meat is stewed with lemon and nutmeg. Then it's all, the meat is kind of like, ground after it's cooked.
Mm-hmm.
Then you use that filling inside giant green olives. And then they get like a breading procedure, you know, flour, egg wash, breadcrumbs, and then they're fried. And my aunt started this conversation with me by asking where I thought she could find these big olives. And then I was like, when you make them, I would like to help because I want to know how to make them. And so yesterday, her and my Aunt Mary Jo and my mom and my Uncle Joe sat around the table, like in assembly line style, like making more than 200 of these stuffed fried olives. And they are so good. I made like a little special cholesterol reduction exception to taste a couple of these fried olives. Wowzer.
I bet they were good. Oh my gosh, so that delicious. Sounds good.
And I definitely am into seeing that going on the holiday cooking agenda for many years to come.
That's fun.
Anyway.
Should we dig into some of our 2018 cooking resolutions?
Let's do it.
Okay. You go first. Kick us off.
You know I'm the
resolution
are.
I only have a few, and you have a bunch, so let's go.
Top of my list is potato gnocchi, and I'll tell you why.
You want to become like an expert? You want to perfect your technique?
When I was first into cooking, I kept trying to make potato gnocchi, and I had several frustrating failures.
Okay.
And so I have not really tried again. I mean, this is 15 years ago or so that I was like, I tried to get Dan's grandmother to teach me. I just could not get them to work.
Okay.
So I left them be. And then... several years later, I mean, I don't know, maybe halfway between then and now, maybe 7 years later, I got into making ricotta gnocchi, which are very delicious and actually a lot easier.
Yeah.
But full to the brim of cholesterol.
Yeah.
So this year I have found myself buying a fair amount of packaged potato gnocchi because it's convenient. It actually has a decent amount of fiber in it. It's just easy and tasty, you know, and low in cholesterol. So, of course I want to, I don't feel good about making anything out of a package. I want to be able to make them myself.
So you're gonna...
what's your potato gnocchi history?
Lousy. Mm. I did try once to make them with sweet potatoes, thinking maybe that would be easier.
I've already read that's harder because it's higher moisture content.
So basically I have tried, I have failed. And then, you know, for so many years, Scott was totally off carbs. So I wasn't like going to try to make myself a gnocchi expert.
I need a ricer.
Oh.
I should have purchased one at Fonte's where we just spent half the afternoon. But I guess I'm always going back to Fonte's. All right. Take it away with one of yours.
So mine my biggest one this year is more cooking out of cookbooks, just because you know me.
I approve.
I know you do. And I am such an improviser. And while I love the fact that I can just kind of make dinner with what I've got, I really am suffering from my food always tastes like my food syndrome. And as you've said to me before,
cookbooks is the cure for that.
And so I am really ready to learn some new skills, make my food more interesting. I remember there have been some times in my life when I've had writing gigs where I made other people's recipes, mm-hmm. and I had to follow them.
It's really good for you.
And it's great. It's a learning experience. It forces you to learn new things. It exercises skills. It creates flavor combinations that you wouldn't do if you were just on your own. So that's my biggest for this year.
Let me try to help you with this.
Yeah.
Hal, I know you resist structure. How often would you like to try a recipe out of a cookbook?
I think I'm going to say once every 2 weeks.
Once every 2 weeks.
Yeah. So I'd like to come out of this having tried, having cooked 25 things out of cookbooks in 2018.
And so maybe every other episode of Local Mouthful we'll talk about what you made.
Yes. Yes.
I like it.
All right. Sounds good.
I could not approve more. That's super exciting. For me, in years past, I've been an excellent meal planner and recorder of my meals. This year, because I moved, everything went kerflooey.
Yeah.
I just completely stopped planning my meals and writing them down. At the end of last year, and I believe the year before, I was able to furnish all you listeners out there with a robust list of everything I made for dinner in X year.
Yeah.
Now, I don't even have any idea what I made for dinner this year. So that has got to stop.
Yeah.
There's something about moving that just throws all your habits into the air. I used to be such a great automatic teeth flosser. Now I'm really struggling to floss. And I was like, oh, my bathroom's too small to floss. It's so weird. Anyway, I feel like something similar happened with this cooking, meal planning and cooking calendar. So I got to get back on the stick.
Yeah.
With that. I don't know how, but I'm going to try.
You can do it. So another one for me is I really want to use up what I've got. I get in the habit of like getting excited about a new ingredient or like, oh, I see black chickpeas. I'm going to buy black chickpeas when I already have 2 bags of regular chickpeas. I'm really bad about using up what I have. Hmm. And so I really want to go through and use things up, move things through. And even when it comes to my preserves, so I'm working on this book right now about using up preserves and I'm moving through things at a good clip, but I still, by the end of 2018, I don't want to have multiple sheet pans of preserves under my couch anymore.
Is worthy.
Yeah.
I have one more thing to share and then we'll move on.
Okay.
Unless you have another resolution.
You go for it.
Mapao tofu. I love it at restaurants. There's no earthly reason why I should not be able to make that dish. I'm going to get it.
Would you make it without pork, though? You'd do a veg version?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
Okay.
Without pork. Although, I mean, I'd like to know how to make it with pork, too.
Yeah.
But they do an amazing vegetarian version at Dan Dan, near you, actually.
Yeah.
And sometimes Dan and I meet up for lunch, and we eat that, and it's really good.
It sounds good.
And I think to myself, I should be able to make this.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
all right, Joy, what are you loving?
Before we say goodbye for 2017, I want to tell you what I love, and that is Tyrone. Tyrone is an Italian nougat candy. You can find it lots of places, but in Philadelphia at Termini Brothers, which you can order this online, not in Philadelphia people, they just make the most extraordinary version. It's chock full of nuts. It is, the texture is perfectly, it's chewy without being like overly sticky. The flavor is just, have you had it?
I have.
It's so great.
Yeah. It's like when you bite into it, you think, oh, this is going to be really chewy. And then it sort of surrenders and it surrenders into this like really flavorful nougat with nuts. And
it has both pistachios and almonds in it. They're toasted. It's just perfect in every way.
And it's really good.
I should have mentioned it in our food gifts episode because it would make a lovely food gift. And, if you've never tried it, you got to seek it out. It's delicious.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this episode. And in fact, for all of 2017, we're going to take the next couple of weeks off and we'll see you in the new year. Thank you for listening. Thank you for a terrific year. Thank you for loving the podcast as much as we do. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.